This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Nurses at St. Vincent Hospital in Worcester remain without a contract today after a mediator ended talks between them and Dallas-based Tenet Healthcare. The talks began just yesterday. Now, this after 149 days on the picket line. The group representing the nurses, the Massachusetts Nurses Association, says that it is the longest strike of its kind nationwide in the last decade. At issue, staffing levels, a particularly sensitive issue for hospitals during the pandemic. Cyrus Moulton is a reporter with the Telegram and Gazette in Worcester and has covered the strike from the beginning. Cyrus, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Cyrus, 149-day strike. Talks ended today. How did we get here?
Well, it's been a long time coming. The negotiations for the contract actually began 2 years before this strike was went into effect in March. So there's been a long history of talks between the two that so far has not resolved.
So break this down for us. What do the nurses want right now? What are they asking for in a new contract?
Sure. The nurses are, the primary issue, as you mentioned, is staffing levels. The nurses are mainly advocating for a 1-to-4 ratio of nurses to patients on medical surgical floors and telemetry units in most cases, with a resource nurse to pitch in and increase staffing in the emergency department and ancillary support in each unit. The nurses have said that the current primarily 1-to-5 ratio of nurse to patients is unsafe. Tenet Healthcare, the owner and operator of St. Vincent, originally proposed a 1-to-4 ratio on 3 of 8 medical surgical floors, also proposed a 1-to-2 ratio in the progressive care unit and another critical care float nurse to address additional patient loads. The hospital and union have mostly declined to speak specifics in their subsequent proposals, especially lately, but the hospital has made concessions such as adopting the staffing language at UMass Memorial that nurses at St. Vincent's have publicly praised since, but so far, no resolution.
So, you know, I think none of us are really strangers to explosive labor negotiations throughout history. We've heard some stories, but this is a really big one. And, 149 days on strike, longest strike in the last 10 years, only 2 days in conversations, and the mediator ends it. Why is it so hard for these two parties to come to agreement?
Well, I think that they were talking today, which was a hopeful sign. But overall, I think the atmosphere between the nurses and the hospital is very strained. As I mentioned, this, although the strike began March 8th, contract negotiations have been going on for 2 years prior, so the union and hospital management had long been at odds over the next contract. And in fact, the nurses' union took a vote of no confidence in the hospital CEO after furloughs at the hospital began in April 2020. Both sides have said that the other is rather disingenuous. You know, the last week's announcement of some service cutbacks at the hospital said the nurses have chosen to strike on a platform full of false allegations about staffing, quality, and safety, and the nurses called the cutbacks a ploy. The hospital's decision, in mid-May to begin hiring permanent replacement nurses also did not help relations, with nurses saying it only strengthened their resolve to be out on strike. And then there's a history between Tenet and St. Vincent nurses. In 2000, about 600 St. Vincent nurses went on strike, a strike which ended 49 days later with a contract. It was the first nurses contract and came after the nurses had organized into a union. And speaking with nurses and reading coverage from the time, the issues of safe staffing levels, as well as a feeling that healthcare was becoming more corporate, were issues then as now.
So there's some precedent there. Let's step back for just a minute, Cyrus. This is taking place during a pandemic where we know hospital workers have been maxed out, stressed out, fatigued and exhausted. Do you think, and do we have evidence to believe that the pandemic was part of what has made this so, what's the word I'm looking for? Hostile or tense?
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely the case. You know, the COVID pandemic was awful for healthcare workers across the country. And I think that what really was an issue here was the feeling that the hospital management wasn't supporting the nurses. They had furloughs, for instance, and the hospital says that they were voluntary. The nurses union disputes that, but the union has said that they had, that PPE was under kind of lock and key. Yeah. And issues of PPE, it's been really tough for healthcare workers.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I thought you were a break there. I do want to ask you one last question briefly. What happens now? Talks ended today. What's the next step for each side, just briefly?
Well, talks ended today without a resolution. The nurses have said that they are that a mediator suggested moving the talks to a national level, which provides another set of eyes on it, from what I understand. That just happened a few minutes ago, so I'm trying to catch up on it as we speak.
Sure.
Apparently, that did not, there was no agreement to do that at this time. So we're kind of back at a situation where we've had talks. They haven't gotten to a resolution. It's unclear who makes the next step. And that
we'll all be watching.
It's difficult to say.
Yeah. All right. That is Cyrus Moulton, reporter with the Telegram and Gazette in Worcester. Cyrus, thanks for catching us up. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's turn to the MBTA, where we now know more about Friday afternoon's Green Line B train crash. So the rearmost westbound train was going 30 miles per hour in a 10-mile-per-hour zone, according to a preliminary investigation by the National Transportation and Safety Board. It hit a second train from behind near Babcock Street, injuring 25 people and causing visible damage to both vehicles and damaging the infrastructure. Here's MBTA General Manager Steve Poftak at the scene of the crash.
We will obviously get to the bottom of this. This should not happen, and we will find out why it happened, and we'll ensure that it won't happen again.
So what went wrong and what else might an investigation uncover? Joining us now to talk about it, Jared Johnson, the executive director of the transit advocacy group Transit Matters. Jared, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So I'm going to start just by asking you, what was your initial reaction when you heard about and then saw photos from the crash on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I think my initial reaction was just making sure that that everyone was okay, and thankfully, you know, no one was seriously injured. And then, you know, the next step was wanting to figure out what happened. So I'm looking forward to the safety panel's review.
All right. So the biggest unknown is, you know, sort of the official cause of the crash. We just gave the latest headline a second ago, and the National Transportation and Safety Board has yet to state the cause. We know, for example, a transportation expert told CBS Boston that accidents like this are usually caused by either mechanical failure or human error. So depending on what the NTSB finds, what's the next step? And as a transit advocate, what do you want to see?
Yeah, the as a result of the derailment back in 2019, there was a safety panel set up, and there were a number of recommendations made from that safety panel. And so I really want to make sure that those recommendations are fully funded and that the T really keeps their eye on the ball when it comes to state of good repair. That's repairing all of the infrastructure, the track, the signals, getting those new cars, on the track, the red line, the orange line cars, and the green line ones that are still, still in the queue. So that's really, really key for me is really making sure that all of those recommendations are fully funded, and that, any changes related to personnel, that those are implemented as soon as possible.
So I want to pick up on that. So you talked about the derailment in 2019. There were also crashes in 2008 and 2009. And after those, the National Transportation Safety Board recommended that the T install what's called a positive train control system that could prevent collisions between trains. The T currently has installed the system on the red, blue, and orange lines, the commuter rail. But it actually, that was 13 years ago, and it only authorized in January 2020 a contract for a new $170 million protection system on the Green Line. It doesn't begin till next year. It'll be completed by 2024. But we know the accidents, at least one of the accidents in 08 and 09, was on the Green Line. I think they both were. So what to do? You say you want to make sure they're funded. You want to make sure the staffing is there. But we saw a 13-year lag. Are you concerned about that? And what does that mean for making sure this really, really doesn't happen again?
Yeah. You know, in the past, there wasn't the funding or the staff. You know, in the past, the T has only been able to spend about $300 or $400 million a year, and now they're able to spend about four or five times that. So it's disappointing that that the system is going to take longer to implement than we would like to see. But they are spending more money. They do now have the capability to get more of these projects online. So you know one of the other holdups is that the FCC. Has to regulate the radio technology that's going to be used in this system. And so I really want to see that. I really want to see that waiver be granted to the MBTA so that they can keep this project on track.
You know, one of the things that occurred to me when I heard about the crash, here we are coming out of a pandemic. There's a lot of concern about traffic on the roads already being back to pre-pandemic level, reticence for people to return to public transportation, especially with the Delta variant and what we're learning about, you know, the levels of contagion there. How does the T convince people that it is safe in every way to get back on the T and get ridership back up, especially in the face of something like this, Jared?
I think it's incumbent on really sort of everyone to make sure that we're thinking about this they were really thinking about this in the context of everything. The same day that there was a crash on the Green Line, there was a pedestrian fatality that got almost no news. And a few days before that, there was the truck crash on 93 that closed down multiple lanes of traffic for the better part of a week, and damaged the structure above. So so we've got that on one side, and then we have, you know, the concern about the Delta variant, but we don't see restaurants, and other indoor spaces closing. So I think we have to make sure that we're not letting, some pre-existing biases really influence, how we're thinking about the T. I have been taking the T, since late spring, early summer of last year, and I feel safe when I'm on the T. The vast majority of folks in my just amateur analysis, you know, well over 90% of the folks on the train are following the mask mandate. Of course I'm concerned about what happened on the Green Line, but even though the T has more derailments than a lot of peer agencies, it is still statistically way safer than the roads. Last year, we actually saw an increase we saw either a slight increase or right around the same amount of traffic fatalities, even though for 4 or 5 months, the roadway volumes really, really dropped. So I think that's some of it. And the T, I think, has done a really good job with their new campaign to encourage people to get back on the T.
All right. That is Jared Johnson, Executive Director of Transit Matters. Jared, thanks for joining us. Good to talk to you.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.